Okay, we've done the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize authorship, own your present story, assess the storylines and plot, and decide what to change. We're moving to step five now, map changes. There are six elements that I want to talk about. As you know, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with, yet they haven't changed? Now, underlying causes are always present for any issue or any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use causes, feelings, history, all as information to focus on now and plan for next. At times, even simply doing what's currently effective dissolves barriers. The psychoanalyst Jung even said, you know, sometimes you just have to move ahead as if there are no problems as a way of resolving them. You just have to outlive the problems. Now, at times people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices for decisions that are difficult or rare, that are not made often, for which they don't get feedback, when they have trouble translating it into understandable terms for them, or when they simply persist in re-entering an old story, which etches it further in the brain each time. So there are six crucial elements to map change. I want to talk about how to understand and incorporate each of these six as a way to understand and master creating a new story. One, and this is so important, we're going to spend an entire module and an entire seminar on this, to regulate states of mind. But I just want to mention a couple of brief things here as an introduction. Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economics graduate students. They were informed the fair price of a security was $3. So these traders knew the actual worth of the security. Think about how that's a significant advantage over the normal Wall Street situation, because a stock is determined only by what someone will bid. So what happened here in price bidding when they knew the value was $3? They still ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark in an auction. When other traders in the experiment stopped paying a premium, the laboratory market crashed. In a second experiment, same group, economics graduate students, they did the same thing but formed another smaller bubble. It wasn't until the third time that these investors wised up enough to stay with the security's actual value even though they'd known it from the start. When Dr. Smith repeated this experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists with considerable experience, they formed the same kind of bubbles. They weren't as extreme, but they were both bubbles. The first two, and then the third, only they got to the real value. So bubbles are formed by optimism and collective tilt, a state of mind that's contagious, of getting on a feedback loop. Increasing prices stimulate optimism, causing more buying with price increases until the bubble, the state of mind, shifts. So it's kind of like the equivalent of the child who said, you know, the emperor doesn't really have any clothes on. So this seemingly irrational force that overrides our logic and knowledge and causes us to believe that rising prices will continue to rise indefinitely, or at least as long as we're betting on them, this is human behavior. This is the way our minds and brains work. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state, a psychophysiological state that determines how we perceive and process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. They're each like a software program. They're internally consistent and do the same thing once we enter that state or enter that software program. So a key element is to be aware of our different states of mind, to know which state works best for what purpose. In other words, for some, a distinction, for example, creative writing versus editing. Two different parts of the brain, two different states of mind. Brainstorming versus completing a project. Same thing, two entirely different states of mind. When someone's in an emotional state, they can be overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. In extreme stress, the emotional brain can even hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So, what do you do? We're going to look at that specifically. I have a system that works amazingly effectively to regulate states of mind. And it's a very simple system that I'll show you exactly how that works and send you an attachment that's a single page that you can use to work with clients. It's called the neural conditioning chart, because once you do it and move from an emotional trigger through recognition of a usual change of state to an anchor, like a mantra to get grounded and centered, to an ideal response, it's simpler than it sounds as I'm saying it. Once you do that enough, it rewires the brain so that what was an emotional trigger boots up the response that is ideal. So this is something we're going to explore fully in session 6, because the brain equation for good decision is the balance of right brain, emotional, plus left brain, logical, intellectual. And your response affects the quality and effectiveness of your next experience. So that's why regulation, and we'll talk more about this. It will make more sense as we look at it specifically. Number 2, in terms of mapping changes, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency. It's like saying all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available, and we choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of really an infinite number of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, change the channel. Change your thoughts, what you focus on, because our minds work like a camera, basically. There are an infinite number of possibilities, but what we choose to focus on is what aligns our energy field, and it's in that way that we direct our efforts, our thoughts, and create an effectiveness. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over, and I'll explain why that is. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We may want to talk more with Deborah about the whole realm of the book she mentioned and what she has to offer. So hang around. We'll get back to that. We project energy in our emotions and our thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno effect, this was developed, really, in terms of explanation and application by Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. He's a colleague, someone I've collaborated with, a neuroscientist at UCLA. And this is what the quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O, effect is. The mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, those chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, by consistent focus, the brain rewires. So this concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. Instead of going back into already existing circuitry with a problem, the brain connection, the new connections, literally activate new pathways and new neuronal networks, and then ultimately, when repeated, become mind maps and subsequently influence what we see and what we do. So New neuronal networks and pathways are created, in other words, when we focus on solutions. But the already existing circuitry is further etched by focusing on existing problems, even when the intent is to resolve those problems. This is how people can get stuck in therapy. Neuroscience validates that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts or the causes of our feelings that's most beneficial, but on a present moment awareness of choice. The law of attraction, and that originally came from the compilation of a lot of research by a psychoanalyst whose work I follow very carefully, Adam Phillips. The law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If, for example, if you lay a nail and a paper clip on a table side by side, nothing happens. But if you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip because the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction and create a polarity. That's how our thoughts and our energy field works. When all of you, literally at a molecular level, is going in the same direction and focused, you have immensely more power. What you're doing with your personal energy field then becomes affected. So each moment, how do you align and focus your energy field? Now, the law of attraction, I'm sure every one of you have seen the film The Secret. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. I can save you some money on that one. Or manifest a pizza. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story that you want. Now, my favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 4 decades before it was released. The Secret emphasizes how much we need to ask, believe, and receive. I don't think it works that way. You can ask, believe, and create, because you won't passively receive. So my grandmother's critique of the film before it came out, wishes don't wash dishes. Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. This is from neuroscience. This is from quantum physics. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity can align your energy field to pursue prosperity if you develop a plan. Now, here's at a brain level how that works. Our unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's sort of like, in an old-style camera, a print or a negative is the same image. Our unconscious is that image. But here's the power of focus. Whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. The focus is on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on overweight. That won't work. If you focus on a diet, that focuses on deprivation. Here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Guess how long that's going to last? So Dr. Joseph Murray put this very simply. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make that true. Notice which people worry about illness. Who talks about pains or disorders? The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So, put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. And this manifests resistance. When you focus on what you don't want sort of falls away, kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. Now, again, the energy we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but of energy field, this invisible, very real connection. Think about how you use your energy field, how you use it for intuition, how you use it to read whether someone's warm and inviting or cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Now, quantum physics offers us still another paradigm that I think is useful here. In addition to our individual energy field, there is a collective field. And you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this the unified field theory. Basically, he said, we as a human being are each a bundle of energy. Our mind, body, spirit are bundles of energy, but interact with the energy field of another person. And that intersubjective experience creates a new dimension. The same with an individual who interacts with the energy field of another group of people, of an entire group. There is a collective energy field. And this, and I'll talk some more about how our states of mind affect this when we get to that point. So we project energy frequencies and, like a magnet, attract what we focus on. If we focus on the negative and on problems, that's going to be what we create. If we focus on the positive and on solutions, that's what we'll create. Now, the addendum to this is that actions have to be in alignment with thinking. Negative or positive results don't just happen, but come about as the result of plan and action, strategy and successful enactment. Consistent negative thoughts send negative chemicals into the body, and dis-ease can result. So when you're grounded and connected, and think about how these are physics terms, when you're grounded and connected to yourself, it opens doors and creates synchronicity. And an aspect of positive psychology that's been studied is being in the zone. It's an internal alignment of your energy field, of an immersion in a performance state of mind. Your choices set this flow into motion, just as other choices can derail this process. You set your day in motion, for example, when you wake up happy and excited about what you do, or when you ask positive questions that put you in an instant state of mind. An example here is infertility. For someone who has an urgency to get pregnant, the desperation can sabotage intention and create a response in the body that prevents pregnancy. When that energy is released and focused positively, it can change the results. A study, for example, was done on couples who'd had three consecutive spontaneous miscarriages, and when they had active professional work on this, then over 90% were able to successfully get pregnant. The law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good or bad things. We keep coming back to what we run away from. We attract what we resist because we engage it by resisting it. It's like saying denial is another form of engagement. The most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want in disguise, because that's a negative focus. Most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to target the specific outcomes that you want. So look at the things that you focus on that you don't want, and even make a list of them. And this is not to engage it, but for ready recollection. You cue your radar to be aware instantly of things that are emotional triggers or that you focus on that you don't want that can get you in a negative loop. And again, we're going to come back to this in looking at states of mind. And be specific about what you do want, not what you don't want in disguise, but what you do want and the expectation that you will get it and create a strategic plan to do it. So I want to do just a brief exercise with you. This is and articulate your unconscious exercise. Now, I want you to do this test to see how it works. We're on lecture mode, so you can talk out loud and respond to this. And I'm going to ask you to say out loud, after each statement I make, "Your wish is my command." Okay? "I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I just worked out and feel invigorated." Reflect on the different experience that you had after each of these, and the whole mind-body experience after each statement. This way of thinking is not magical, but it's why most people don't have a spectacular result, because this is what your unconscious is doing. Every time you focus on something or say something to yourself, your unconscious is saying, "Your wish is my command." So that's why we need to strategically plan and structure exactly what we want, the focus on what we want and the plan to get there and to stick with it. So this is another way of saying the pen is in your hand to write your story. And since you're writing your script, are your thoughts worthy? Are they worthy of you? Couple of quotes. William James, the father of American psychology, said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." So we have to really be selective with what we engage. Is it worthy of your attention, of your focus? And the other quote is from my favorite grandmother, this secret critic. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Think about that. Here's a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves in us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, regret, greed, arrogance, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride. The other is good. It's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, compassion, faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" And the wise Cherokee simply said, "The one you feed." 3. Visualize changes. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into 3 groups to practice shooting free throws. This is the prototype study many years ago that launched a whole investigation. You probably heard of it. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily at free throws. Another practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes a day for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. The second group, actual practice, 30 minutes every day, 24% improvement. The third group, visualization only, 23% improvement. It was almost the same. Subsequent studies have shown that visualization only can create superior results, because when you visualize the task, like shooting the basket, you can do it perfectly each time, and you don't have to do a near miss and recalibrate and do it again and take that additional time. So on brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actually shooting. So the same thing is happening in our brain when we're visualizing it and when we're actually doing it. So one possibility is to create a vision, then look back to see the path to get there, to back into it. Most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image, and there's a chapter in a book that I have that I'm doing a slight revision. I'm going to send you a copy of the book. It's an e-book called Outsmart Your Brain, an Instruction Manual. There's an entire chapter devoted to visualization and a systematic way to do that, which is basically a way to rewire your brain. And it can be useful for some clients who can't imagine doing something or have anxiety or fear of success to create the scenario of doing it and just figure out a way to strategically back into it. And the other component of that chapter is the mind component, which is the affirmations, the story that support the vision. So it's a mind-brain combination of one strategy or one tool to use that can be immensely effective. So every image draws you toward its conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, like, well, I can't dance, or I'll look goofy if I really cut loose, then that destination will draw your brain to it, and you'll live out that assumption. If you picture yourself in doing something as an active visualization, then you're ultimately, when you repeat it, rewiring your brain. And that chapter will show more detail about how to do that, but I won't go into it. So create an image of your goal and live into it. Now, here's an example of a focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. And look at those pictures in your head every day. Think about what a different approach this is than, you know, giving somebody a new diet or some exercise tips, or as we were talking at the beginning of this seminar. This begins with the experience of your client, of having your client develop a story that he or she wants, to look at the specifics of that, to picture what they want, for example, with their body, to write down an ideal body weight range for them, their story, their goal. Focus on the body that you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. Now, remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and look like somebody else. And don't focus on losing weight. That's a negative thing, but focus on the one thing that you want, your ideal body, your true body self. So you can't, you know, to do this right, you wouldn't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism or hereditary body size or slow thyroid or the spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large size, but to focus on positive. Look at and admire your body on a daily basis, beginning and end of each day. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have of where you want to get to. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. This is something I learned in working with a couple of thousand of eating disorder individuals. Whenever someone is totally present when they eat and present throughout for each bite, they will never eat symptomatically, including overeating. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. That means you have to take responsibility for every bite that you take. Because after the second or third bite, you're likely to not want to do that thoroughly chewed food and visualization of the rest of that cheesecake in your body. So if you don't want to do it, that's a simple choice. Think and feel as though your desire is manifested, and create your body as your life intentionally. Bite by bite, step by step, feeling by feeling. And remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, and create. Now, here's just a little bit more about the art of a vision to explain that, and you're going to see this in the chapter, but I want to just mention to you. Visualization is a way to rehearse for your future. It's both an art and a science to establish a vision. What you're doing is programming a future memory. I want to give you an example of a way that I used it and tell you the result, but I'd like you to do the brief exercise with me. Close your eyes and visualize a yellow Jeep. Imagine walking up to that Jeep. Look at all the detail. The yellow Jeep, the color, the bumper, the tires. Walk all the way around the Jeep. And as you get back to the driver's side, open the door and feel the cool metal in your hand. As you open the door, look inside at the seat, at the dash. As you sit in the seat and close the door, hear how soundly the door closes. As you grip the wheel and look through the windshield, imagine what it's like to drive. Feel how secure and firm the seat holds you. Notice the smell of the Jeep. As you turn on the motor, listen to the sound of the motor. Feel the vibration of the Jeep. As you hold the wheel and again look through the windshield, imagine driving it. Now, as you turn it off and get out and close the door and hear the soundness of that closure and walk away, turn around one more time to look at the Jeep and take it all in. Now, open your eyes. The first time I applied that was when a group of executives asked me to do a seminar to them on writing a first book. And it was they set aside, we did 3 hours, and there were 24 executives there. And this was a live workshop I did with them. The first thing I asked them, as I got to the time to begin, was how many of you have seen a yellow Jeep in the last month? And it was a strange way to begin, so they kind of looked at me. They realized I was serious. One of the 24 raised his hand. I then did this exercise with them and asked them if they happened to see a yellow Jeep. The first question, when I asked them, has anyone seen a yellow Jeep? Only one person raised his hand. I then asked, if after this exercise you happen to see a yellow Jeep, would you let me know by email or by telephone? In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 let me know that they had seen a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? The number of yellow Jeeps in the greater Houston area did not increase. What happened is that what someone sees, what appears on your radar screen, is determined by belief and assumption. A yellow Jeep was pre-programmed as possibility. For example, the most common reason people don't earn more money and accumulate wealth is they don't see themselves as capable of it. I can tell you how much money someone's going to make by listening to their assumptions. Once you genuinely see yourself as capable of doing something, then all sorts of things begin to happen and you begin to enact it. So, the principle that by visualizing something creates the same activation of the same process in our brain as actually doing it. So by having a vision and returning and revisiting that vision on a regular basis creates the etching of that process in our brain. So visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain. The brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is actual or imagined, and replays, programs neural networks and neural pathways to more strongly etch the experience. So this can help someone create a successful scenario and endpoint, and then simply they have to back into doing it. So this is the neuroscience of a vision. And it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're part of an identity, but a vision starts at the other end, at the successful outcome. So someone can bypass that whole process and look at a successful outcome. And let me tell you an application here. A professional book that I wrote early in my career was Success and the Fear of Success in Women. It was a book on psychoanalytic work with people who had significant fear of success. It was professionals and executives who were sabotaging themselves. And that book was named one of the most 100 most influential professional books of the 20th century. And I'm saying that to tell you, I have changed my mind. I see now that visualization is a much more effective, brain-centered, and quicker, more successful way to work on someone's fear of success than anything that we can do from a psychotherapeutic or a psychoanalytic perspective. To create a vision is a way to change the brain, and to do mentor coaching is a way to successfully plan to attain that vision. So let me give you a quick illustration. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So when you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. And your brain can't tell who conjured it. You are reality. So that obviates the fear of success. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's the key. You don't make brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register and gets extruded as noise. And it needs to be incorporated into identity to make it permanent. This is what we're going to return to because this is the P of the roadmap, the final step. This is, for example, I believe, why 95% of people who diet gain back their weight, plus often a pound or two. They don't reprogram their body image. They don't revise their mind software. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity rather than just something you do or success really belonging to somebody else. So your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture. But your conscious mind can. So your conscious mind has to incorporate this evolving story to include and assemble the imagery as part of the story. Otherwise, unconscious messages will delete access to or believability of the image. So there are three key elements to this. Repetition. Neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be reviewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of yourself, as part of your evolving identity. And third, be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal. Now, a kind of a margin note here, write it down for review. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless we put it in an output channel. There's very recent research out of England that shows that whenever we read a book out loud, we have significantly better retention than when we simply read it passively and silently. We have to put it in an output channel. So visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision simply serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's an example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on two occasions. He had two 99s. Everything else was triple digits. So to preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. He would imagine driving to the golf course each day after getting dressed, warming up, stretching, smelling the flowers and the grass. Each stroke, he would walk to the ball. He visualized doing this for 7 hours each day, 7 days a week, for 7 years. His first outing after he was released from captivity, he shot a 74. That's the power of a vision of mind over matters. The fourth element to map change, insight, changes the brain. I've already discussed this in terms of the moment of insight, the aha experience, changing, actually activating the brain and vaulting into a new state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative. The aha lights up three parts of the brain: information, facts, nothing lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention hardwires it. The incorporation into our identity hardwires it. Number five, take action. And we've discussed this already in terms of putting it into an output channel. Another application: the world won't pay you for what you know. It'll pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important, but payday comes with action. It may not be perfect, but you can create a way to move forward, self-correct, keeping on moving forward, learning from mistakes, and producing results. This is why a group of sometimes the brightest group anywhere with all kind of degrees can plan and figure out something, but struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the second semester of community college has a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. And number six, identity transformation. This is the P of the roadmap. This is what we're going to spend a good deal of time on, because that new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently and incorporated into a sense of who you are as part of an evolving self, a component of an identity. So, in summary now, because I want to have some time for discussion, the neuroscience of change in coaching, a summary, and this is in your outline. We focus on solutions rather than understanding why, on looking at understanding old patterns that are hardwired in order to create possibilities and a strategy for new experience, to take ownership of the story, followed by recognition in order to understand, assess, and change. Those are the steps we've dealt with so far. So let's review some of the important elements to map change. First, regulate the state of mind and manage emotions so that there's a balanced learning, left and right brain, intellectual and emotional. Concentrate on new behaviors rather than problems in order to create new brain pathways. Co-create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Facilitate in your client the insight rather than giving advice. People can usually tell when you're doing inquiries that prompt insight versus attempts at persuasion. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Remember, the power is in the focus. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Facilitate new behaviors and guide the development and actualization of new mental maps. Collaboratively conceptualize the mental map, the internal model of the client, in order to facilitate a new level of mastery. We're going to review that and expand it as we look at the final step of the roadmap. Now, in the event of diversion to an old feeling or behavior, simply redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. We are the guide. We are the mentor, coach, and the guide. And that's why I have an agreement with every client at the beginning that I can interrupt them and want them to interrupt me if there's a question. Remember that the power is in the focus, that permanent change comes from the consistency of that focus. Knowledge conveyed passively is inert. Knowledge generated through insight changes the mind and brain. And finally, conceptualize the meta map with the client in order to master and internalize the process. It's another level of mastery. This helps create an understanding of an overview, an outline to incorporate the new experience as a storyline and as a part of an evolving identity.